How should I pronounce that?
Hey, buddy. Yeah, Nemus. Nemus is fine.
Awesome. I'm going to wait for some people to trickle in. We had a little last-minute switch up on the back end.
Sure.
Crazy.
Is that Tenement to me?
It is, yeah. Nena was going to be... Oh, awesome. We have a request. Maybe Nena will be joining us. Yeah, I was going to be doing a quick sub for Nena, but... Looks like she's here. Awesome. And Daniel, she's the co-host. How are you feeling, Nena?
I'm good. A little bit sleepy, but good.
Good. That is good to hear.
Hey, Nemus. Hey, baby. Hey, Danny.
Hey, Nena. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dan.
For once, it looks like no issues. Everybody even came up without an issue. Elon's finally getting on it. Knock on wood as I accept another request. Let's see.
Hey, guys.
Wow, look at that. How's it going?
Fine. On my side of the world, it's the end of the working day, so a bit tired, but the good news is that next week we'll have bank holidays, and I'm just about to go to a kite surf holiday, so awesome.
Did you say kite surf?
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jealous.
Yes, I know.
That
way. Oh, yeah, I will go to Egypt. So fingers crossed for a nice forecast and a whole week of wind.
Wait, forgive my ignorance. Kite surfing on water? Like, is it those surfboards that have the giant? Okay, awesome. Cool.
Yes.
I've like only seen kite, those. Yeah.
Kites in the air. And the board on your feet. Yeah.
Are you strapped into it? Kind of like a wakeboard? Yeah. Yep. That's
but with the kite.
Super fun. You better put some videos up on Twitter for us all. Or X.
Yes, please. That sounds super, super fun.
Yeah, it is.
Are you going with Alex?
Yes. It's pretty similar to meditation for me. Yeah.
Okay.
The part with Alex, yes, we will take him with us. And he's pretty confident that he will kite surf as well.
That's so cool to hear you say that. Because I was recently talking with a friend. I recently had a snowboarding vacation. And it's the same for me, even though it's, you know, a very intense, like, action energy taking sport, it is genuinely the closest I ever able to get to meditation. Like, I don't even think about work, don't need to even think about my phone, like, and I feel like that's what you were kind of touching on, right? It's that flow state.
Yes, and focused just on one thing, to survive.
Yeah, actually, yeah. The person I was pointing this out to the other day was like, well, it kind of makes sense. You're focusing all of your mind on not dying.
Yeah, which is so different because in my daily routine, I'm focused between around 100 things at the same time. And when you need to be focused on just one thing, it's so nice.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, I have never surfed. I have never done like any of that. I think I would be pretty bad at that. I don't know. But I have the same feeling when I'm boxing. Like you are actually focusing and not getting kicked. So nothing else is in your mind.
Yeah, same for me, surf.
What's your...
Are you still in South Africa?
Yeah, I'm still in South Africa.
Oh, nice.
And I'm looking at the ocean now, and like there's nothing more meditative than working hard in the morning and then going for a lunchtime surf in the cold water and then working again in the afternoon. That's like my routine.
What about you, Nemus? What is your meditation kind of look like?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, I actually go, I'm still in Dubai, by the way. I just moved like a week ago. I decided just to stay, you know. And no, also my team is here, you know, Cryptocedron. So, but I go to the gym and then after that, I go to the sauna. And I feel like sauna is also a really good opportunity to meditate and just be with yourself, you know. So that's my thing.
Yeah, especially because you cannot take anything with you there. Like you are actually there. Yeah.
Right.
I think my peak meditative state would be last year. I had a condo at a ski resort that had a sauna. So I would get done snowboarding and then just go sit in that for an hour. And that was heaven for the muscles, too.
Right. I mean, it's much better if you're like in a cold place, because in Dubai, it's actually hot. Right. So it's kind of a weird thing going into a sauna here. But nevertheless, I still enjoy it, you know.
Well, speaking of Dubai, maybe let's get into it. I think this will be pretty fun because I was genuinely on vacation and then have been off most of this week, so I won't be feigning any questions. I'm super curious to hear about how Dubai was. Where to even start, though? Nana, you probably had more plans for this, or Daniel, is there somewhere in particular we want to kick off? How was it as a whole?
Someone said that it rained there. I don't know if anyone saw any of the...
A little bit, it looked like.
Yeah, I think I was there. There was like a bit of a drizzle the one day. But yeah, so if you had an umbrella, you were sort of fine.
You basically swam that day.
Yeah, what?
I'm obviously joking.
Yeah, how was there just like a day or two where everything was kind of on pause and shut down? Like what actually happened with all that weather? I saw some people acting crazy, like, we don't care, it's not going to stop us. And then other people acting sensible.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I landed in the storm. So everything was sort of smooth sailing for me, to be honest. I landed in the storm. My flight wasn't delayed. My baggage arrived. The taxi to the hotel was like a little bit sketchy. I thought he was going to fly off the road at some point. But then, and then sort of the next day, like it was pretty much wherever you ended up, wherever you got like stuck, you got stuck and you like couldn't really be super mobile the next day. Obviously, the Cosmoverse conference was cancelled. The Atom Dubai was cancelled. But it wasn't so bad for me. I know a lot of people had really, really bad times. I don't know if anyone has anything to chime in, but I was sort of okay with the whole situation for the most part. But some people got stuck in taxis for like 10 hours in the floods, and other people had to land their flights in Oman and then do 10-hour taxis into Dubai. So there was some crazy stuff going down for sure.
I saw one video from someone's hotel room or wherever they were, you know, somewhere 20 floors up or something, and they were just filming the building across the street from them, another like hotel skyscraper type thing, and furniture from the deck was just like flying off, and at one point something like a cushion almost hit whoever was filming, like it flew across the street from the porch. And like it was
kind of crazy. I saw that too, and they were like the new airdrop is furniture airdrops or something. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh my god, I didn't, but surprise airdrop. Yeah. Going Simon, we just got Simon up.
Yo, bro. What's up, legend?
What's up, bro? How's it?
How's it, sir? Good, bro. Yeah, Sorry, I missed the start of the space. It's been a bit hectic today with a few back-to-back spaces and calls, but good to be on, and yeah, good to be back from Dubai.
No worries. We always sort of just do a little chatter at the start to warm us up. Simon, we haven't spoken in a long while. This is a tenderment to me on this account, by the way, but long time no speak.
Oh, legend. It's been a while and a half.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I still see you around on Twitter all the time, but I feel like I haven't been in a space with you in quite a while.
Yeah, I've been on the grind in a good way, but I'm around. My face is around. Doesn't mean I always have some videos and things, but yeah, good to hear from you, man.
Were you in Dubai for Token 2049 too?
I was in Dubai. Yeah, it was an interesting experience, that's for sure.
Okay, so I guess question to the whole panel. Other than the storms, what were some highlights of the Dubai trip? Whether it was something networking, cool project you discovered, people you met. I'm genuinely curious because I not only didn't go, but I was kind of tuned out for the whole week as well.
I'm sure we all have some sort of highlights. Can you hear me okay, by the way, Timmy?
Yeah, everybody sounds great to me, the space so far.
Great. Right. I think for me, some of the highlights were just seeing some of the sort of hyped up chains that are deployed on Cosmos technology, such as Babylon, obviously Celestia, Berachain, just like seeing like the strong hype and community around these Cosmos based chains is super interesting. And you know, I find it to be quite fascinating that these chains do not necessarily form part of like the Cosmos community or like, I guess, what people call the Cosmos ecosystem, even though they are Cosmos based chains. I think it just gives me a lot of like, makes me feel really good about the future of L1s and different L1s finding different niches. I think that will spill over hopefully into what we currently call the Cosmos community. And maybe allow people from other ecosystems to start seeing the Cosmos tech stack in a different light, which I'm pretty excited about.
That's interesting. Somebody brought up a funny analogy to me the other day about Cosmos that I've been thinking about and kind of agree with the more I think. I might butcher this a little because, again, secondhand, but they're kind of comparing it to Facebook and social medias, where Cosmos at the start was kind of like Facebook at the start. Very tight community, like invite only college people, only certain colleges at first. Then sort of phase two of Cosmos, where we're in now and where we're almost getting towards the end of, is sort of like the next stage of Facebook, sort of what it is now, where anyone can join, and it's more of a platform than a specific community. You don't need to know everyone on there. And then the next step that we're going towards is not really Facebook, but how social media just became a thing in general, where you'll have an account on multiple different ones. They're all sort of the same thing, but relate, but different. You know, you can sign into your YouTube with an X account. You can sign in almost anywhere with your Google account. And that's sort of where I think I agree, the more I've thought about it, the more Cosmos is heading that direction of, it's going to be less and less a tight OG community and more just a general description of like the stack and similarities between a bunch of rather independent things. And I do feel like I butchered that, but when he broke it down, I found myself nodding and going, yeah, that kind of fits. I agree. And I got a little bit of that from what you were saying, Daniel, like Cosmos as whatever that term means is expanding rapidly for sure.
I reckon my highlight of Dubai was this incredible sushi that I had. I'm just joking. I did find some incredible sushi though in Dubai. It was a bit difficult the first few days because I was very, very sick and recovering from a tropical fever, a very bad tropical fever. And then the floods happened and it was really hard to get around and it was challenging. But I would say for me, it was interesting because I didn't have the same, I guess, energy levels as I normally have. And so doing the whole BD networking thing and meeting 100 and 200 people was a little bit more challenging. So I took the time to really spend time with I guess people that I know, like maybe or caught up, met with projects that we're talking to for launch, really kind of connected with a lot of people that we're kind of already in chats with. And then actually spent a fair few days with the Neutron and Delphi Labs guys. And that was probably really, really good. So we did a workshop, I think it was one day, and then a kind of like a half day that got semi-cancelled because of the rain. But we spent like a, and then I had more catch-ups with Spade and the guys, and we spent a fair bit of time, like, I guess like just brainstorming, like ecosystem marketing, as well as I got to catch up with them regarding like some of our plans for the Astro Wars and all this good stuff. And I think that was really, really good because it not only deepened the relationship further and kind of caught up on a lot of things that we've talked about for a long time, but it was just really good to spend time in person with builders around the ecosystem and get an idea of what's coming and the plans and everything like that. So yeah, I think that was my biggest highlight of Dubai. And if I could have like just boiled it down, I think that day and a half was the most worth it for the whole trip. There was sure at the end there was a couple of like good yacht parties and things like that, but I would say that that was the highlight of the trip for sure.
Quick question for both you and Daniel, actually, and everyone here. Have you guys been to previous years of Token 2049? I'm wondering how they compared. And same for Nana, Biz, and Nemesis, if you guys have. Also, does anyone... I have been too embarrassed to ask this, but what's that number? What's happening in 2049? Does anyone know?
SBF gets released from prison in 2049.
Wait, really?
Yeah, you got 25 years from this year.
Wait, is this the first year that this event has happened?
No, no. It was. They made the event.
Not really.
With prophecy.
With prophecy. Wait, so where does that number come from? If it was made before he was sentenced, does anyone know?
That's how prophecies work.
I guess so. Actually, I should. No, yeah, I shouldn't question it much. No. What about you? Well, since you're unmuted, highlight of Token 2049.
Oh, so many. I mean, bullish on the food of Dubai, like really, really good in general. I would say I was quite impressed that everything was fresh, because like I'm in New York, and in New York we don't get anything fresh, especially during like winter and stuff. And they actually had fresh food, which was impressive. It was like, if you can do it, why we can do it? So that was something like cultural, interesting. But more than that, I think that, well, of course, I got to catch up with everyone that is speaking right now. And that was amazing. I think I had never met in person or actually sit in person with Nemus, and that was one very interesting thing, because we actually got together the night of the storm. So basically I was staying right in front of his building, which was the same building as Cryptocido, as Vallejo from Quasar, and can you hear me?
Yep.
I think okay. So. You might have cut out for a second, but I think you're all good.
Yeah, and then so that was interesting, because that night we just got together, like something very chill, and then we spent a pretty good time. I got to meet very well Nemus and talk about like taxes, a lot of taxes, which was interesting. But overall, I think that the situation, like the shift in the market, it reminded me a lot of like 2021, like one of my first events, where everyone was much bullish, where all the VCs were like trying to invest, where the KOLs were actually like, well, one, there was a lot of KOLs. Like I was in a yacht party, and it was full of KOLs, all of them like over 300K followers, 1 million followers from all around the world, and they were deploying capital already. So like the turn in the market was for me very interesting. And then of course the new narratives, like we have AI being something that is leading the way. The new Bitcoin narratives are like for staking and stuff is taking a lot of strength there. And yeah, and I kind of enjoyed seeing all the VCs fighting for the projects, because last years it has been a lot of like projects begging for VCs, and again things just changed. So yeah, those were like my highlights.
Was there a lot of talk about Bitcoin runes? Just runes, like that came with the halvening. Was that much of a focus, or is it mainly? I feel like these events often are either fully Bitcoin focused or almost not at all. Yeah, go ahead, Nemeth.
I mean, I personally haven't seen it, but I didn't participate in the Token 2049. I was just in the side events, but I got to meet the Delphi Labs team and also the Asteroid founder. So, and they are obviously like bullish, all things ordinals, runes, and so on. So this was my only moment talking about that stuff, actually. But other than that, I agree with Nana. Like most of the topics were like, you know, Bitcoin L2s, restaking, AI. Terra chain, those kind of things, right? So, but I don't know, like about runes, I don't know that like a big opinion on this, to be honest.
Yeah,
it didn't seem to perform very well.
Yeah. Much going on about it. Cool. And then, would you say, do you have any other highlights?
Sure. I mean, again, I just participated in the side events. I think they were all pretty cool. I mean, there were like hundreds of side events probably. So you don't really have to go to the main event if you don't want, right? But I also enjoyed catching up with all the people, also met a lot of new people. And yeah, obviously also talking to you, Nana. I followed you on Twitter for like the last 2 years or something like that, and finally got the chance to talk to you and learn about a lot about, you know, regulations in crypto, New York, all this kind of stuff. So that was pretty fun, to be honest. But other than that, it definitely feels like the bull market is back, even though we have like sort of like a few rough weeks behind us, let's put it that way. But overall, you can see like we are on the right trajectory, I would say. So it was enjoyable.
Awesome. And then I guess Biz, what about you? Or do you prefer Biz me?
For me, one of the highlights was that I was perfectly prepared for a presentation that never happened. But
oh no!
Yes, it was meant to be on the 16th, but yeah, the hall was flooded. Nemus knows best about it because it was the Cosmoverse event. But yeah, even though the experience was amazing, for me this was the first Token 2049 event. It was huge. I didn't expect this because the number of the side events, all of the network was there, all of the people that I already know, and it was pretty awesome to catch up with everyone. And Nana was there, which was the best part, because it's always awesome to be with her. Yeah, she's so inspiring. And yeah, I think I miss her. And I've tried to catch up with Simon. But yeah, we didn't manage to organize it, Simon. So you are owning one. Yeah, for the next time. But yeah, the best part was that everyone were bullish, and I managed to meet with some new people. For example, the team behind the. Behind the union, and I was so impressed and I was so inspired by these guys, how focused, how innovative thinking they have. And of course it's always inspiring to meet with this type of teams and people, and I think this is the best part of Cosmos, because all of the new teams that are raising the attention now, they're pretty this type. So yeah, this was the highlight for me.
Sounds like despite the weather, it still was a blast. Yeah, and then I saw you on mute. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that when that Simon, it was very difficult to reach him out in general because he was a little bit sick. I think I met him. It was because of he was in the Neutron and Delphi marketing thing, and I was there, and I was like, oh my god, I didn't even know that he was in Dubai. So he was kind of low key in a way. So I get that. But what Vivi was saying is so true. Like I feel that there was also like a shift in marketing. I don't know what you and maybe Nemus, what you guys have seen, even Simon, but I see that like the last cycle we had a lot of marketing that was like super DJing oriented, like to the moon, like walk me, like all those things. And now I kind of see that the companies are actually acting like companies and focusing in like narratives that are going to work more also with the retail users and with the market makers, like how to really get to talk to these people in a much more serious way so that they take us seriously. And I feel that that was very interesting. That was also one of the big things that I saw and that we had from the conversation with Union. But also like Mantra was doing kind of the same. The Vera people, like, yeah, we can say they're very controversial. They're good at that. But I think I was like in three different events of Vera people, and one of them was focused on women, and they really tried to get each audience as they should. Like the KOL one that I talk about, that was hosted by Vera. And the fact that they were able to put in one yet like 100 KOLs, all of them with 500,000 followers, just to talk and to decide like, okay, what else is happening and how can we make some progress with the retail users? I think that was very big.
Yeah, it's funny you touched on the marketing. I think Verachain really absolutely owned that. Like, they just know how to play the fine line between degen marketing and community building and everything, and just it, everywhere you looked, everything was Verachain. Everyone was talking about Verachain. They even had like, I remember I was sitting at a caught up with Deedle, right? And we're sitting at a bar and we see this like light in the sky and it's just the head of a bear. And I was like, man, these guys are everywhere. They just capture the attention at every single corner. And I was like, there's some people that know how to market. Sure, they got a big budget to put behind it, but they were just right on the money the whole time.
I found all that super interesting. Anyone else like just comparisons how things have evolved compared to last cycles? Maybe not with this event in particular, but other in-person events you went to last year and how this vibe differed, and including like side events, like as you were saying, Nemus. Because that's really interesting. That's what I think is, or I find personally the most interesting way to look at most things in crypto at this point is sort of relative to how they were a year ago or a cycle ago. Any other big sort of, yeah.
I just wanted to confirm what you were saying. I mean, apart from, you know, we have seen all this meme coin craze and so on, all this stuff going on, obviously. But I also feel like the events, it's more like almost crypto has grown up a little bit since the last cycle. You know, it feels less scammy. It feels like they're actually like real projects now building these days. Obviously, you have some exceptions, but it's like, yeah, over the last few years, crypto has definitely grown up. And maybe this is the right thing also. Maybe that's our time now. So I just want to confirm that I also had the same feeling.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I mean, it's grown up, but I guess all the people in crypto have also grown up. It's like when a lot of us started, we were potentially in our 20s. And now it's like a lot of people in crypto even have kids. You know, it's like a whole different approach to crypto. Although there are still a lot of young people in crypto. And I actually went out like a sort of looking for a lot of the young people and seeing what the sort of the 21-year-olds in crypto are building these days. It's very interesting to see like the different generations or generational gaps.
And what did you find? What are they building these days?
I mean, like one of the interesting 21-year-olds that I've known for a while is Rushi from Movement, which is the Move EVM. And they raised it like, I don't know, some crazy valuation. I spoke with some guys from like UPenn Crypto Club. And just like, I guess more than anything, I was just happy to see that young people are still getting involved in the space, that like people from college are still somewhat bullish or interested in getting involved in the crypto space, because it's very easy for, I guess, undergrads now from a lot of the top schools, or not even necessarily the top schools, just undergrads in general from computer science programs, to gravitate towards AI, because that just seems to be like have such a huge force of gravity at the moment. So I love seeing that there are still these sort of outliers gravitating towards crypto.
I just thought in my head, I'm like, kids these days.
Kids these days.
We're like,
kids these days and their AI.
Which is this generation, what are they building? It's
completely.
It's interesting when you talk about like the growing up of the space. I feel like there's some areas where it's definitely grown up, but there's also areas where it's still not. Like I guess I get to see like sort of more some of the dirtier sides of the industry, I guess, in many fronts. Especially Dubai shows a lot of this in some capacity too, because we do get a lot of that, like KOL. There's a lot of like people that can base themselves in Dubai, and they're not necessarily outright scams, but they can actually like very much bend the rules a little bit around crypto, because they're kind of in a more of a safe haven.
They're not in it for the good of the industry, maybe. You know,
or anything long term. Yeah. Like I see, you know, running a launchpad, talking to exchanges all the time, and talking to market makers, and seeing all this stuff. I see so many flips, right? I see so much like a founder on their fifth project that's doing a launch to like extract value and not be around for a long term. So I do see a lot of that. I see that a lot in the AI space, and Dubai kind of gets a bit of that as well. Like it's kind of, there's a big line between these infra builders that are building for the long term. And some of them also build for extract, right? You do see big infra builders also building sometimes chains or things just to like extract as much value in the short term, which is very sad to see. But then on that other side, you do see in the launch space, you see a lot of like optimizing for value extraction, as opposed to like, okay, I've got something that's actually going to solve a problem and I'm going to build for the long term. So I do see also that within the cracks and what happens. But there is definitely a lot of like real businesses that are doing, which is exciting to see.
Well, I'm curious, specifically Daniel42 related, but definitely open to everyone. Were there any eureka moments, whether it was seeing something someone else is doing that you can apply to your thing, or a new sort of just fundamental understanding of what a certain project's trying to do? Any sort of those like clicks moments where something clicks in your brain, you're like, this is why I came on this trip, those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with like a lot of investors and a lot of builders, and I think as Simon said, there were like a ton of KOLs there, and a lot of people were sort of saying how KOLs are now, like so many projects prefer raising from KOLs than VCs, because I guess they're easier to deal with. There's more of them, and they actually benefit your project through marketing. So I think that was one thing. Sorry, another thing, just through speaking to people, was just like hearing about the disaggregation of the industry, and like so many VCs just getting fed up with all the different, like for example, Bitcoin L2s that are launching, and then there's all the EVM L2s, and yeah, so
you just felt like a bit of sort of maybe not animosity, but a bit of impatience towards all that, or
completely, and it's just like, how do we? And I actually I recorded a podcast yesterday with Sebastian from Interop, and something we also spoke about was I think it was the Netscape, one of the old Netscape CEOs, who said something about like all value in business is created through bundling and then unbundling, this continual cycle of unbundling and rebundling. And I feel like crypto, or like a lot of the ecosystem, is going through this big unbundling phase. And like how we're looking at it with 42 is, how do we rebundle a bunch of like the best stuff to make it actually convenient for users again? Because continual unbundling is definitely not convenient to users. And I'm also wondering, like, all of these L2s that are raising at crazy valuations, are they going to be able to, and maybe Simon can chime in on this, but like when they do their token launches, are they going to be able to raise money continuously into the future? Or are a lot of the sort of L2s or ghost L1s, are they going to sort of fade into nothingness very quickly, which will, I guess, deter them from raising a lot of capital up front? And potentially, hopefully, we will see sort of like a shift in the way that token launches or fundraising is done to products that actually are adding value or bringing users or creating new value to the ecosystem, because there's just so many that are currently being invested in.
There's definitely an oversaturation, I feel, yeah. Go ahead, Simon.
It's really hard, to be honest, because, okay, so you get two baskets. You get the big protocols that can be backed by big tier ones, raise a bunch of money, massive valuations, and then when they launch, they're able to attract enough of the right market makers to, and the tier ones help to support that high valuation. They're not necessarily doing token sales anymore. They're sometimes, like, the past it might have been like big ICOs on CoinList and things like that. Now you're seeing more airdrop kind of stuff, but they're still able to extract a lot of value, even doing airdrops. So you hear things like, even Say, for example, there's a lot of like back current stuff about Say selling a lot of OTC tokens, for example, like selling bags OTC because the valuation is so high, they're able to sell to VCs at crazy valuations. And so you do get some of these like infra providers that do extract a lot of value. Like their goal is like trying to get as much money as they can in the short term. But I talked to a few of advisors there that kind of advise many bigger ones and solutions. And they say one of the things they see that's really sad at these big levels is a founder might be 25 or 30 building a chain, and they raise a ton of money, they get such high valuation, and they actually get so stunted by it because these guys gone from nothing or almost nothing to having 50 mil in the bank in a short space of time. And it actually kills a lot of founders' ambitions, or a lot of teams. You end up with very bloated teams that aren't productive or necessarily ambitious.
Do you mean sort of, even if it's like subconscious and non-intentional, there's a bit of that like, oh, we made it, we don't have to work as hard now, we have the money, sort of like a little bit of that leaves. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this, and one of our big advisors is a guy who's had like three exits, and he's seen this happen many times. I've asked him, like, how do you prevent this? How do founders work to prevent this? And he's like, it's almost like very hard to figure out, because you could have like a very humble founder and someone who's like very driven, and not necessarily even driven by money. And then the minute they have 50 mil in the bank in the space of 1 to 2 years, they end up like, it kills their fire, right? They don't have the same, they're still pushing hard and they're still building, and it's not like necessarily always intentional scams, but it's like, you know, they suddenly lose that fire because if it fails, it doesn't matter as much.
Well, the hunger is gone, right? It's like you're no longer fighting for food because you need it. You have the food, so it's just, there's inherently a little less motivation to... Yeah, that makes sense. And I've heard things similar, to be honest, about various projects. Some like quite large ones, honestly. But interesting.
You see this in Cosmos. You see this in Cosmos even. Like, you see projects who've raised a large amount of money who just kind of sit on their hands and you don't hear much about them anymore. They've raised a ridiculous valuation. And it's sad, but that's part of the industry. The other part is there is big projects that know how to extract value as well, right? Like, knowing that by building a layer one and writing the right narrative, or a layer two, they can extract large amounts of capital in short space of time while it's around, and they'll milk it to the most possible. And there's some horror stories out there, but the people they end up hurt the most is retail, right? Projects, retail, everyone around it. So just that side is like those big projects that are able to get those big tier one listings and kind of create these massive valuations. And on the other side, you have, as I mentioned before, you have quick flips, which is like projects that know how to spin up really quickly with the narratives.
Like they might be building an AI project or an AI bot or something like that. And they know how to like market, they know how to build hype. They know how to leverage KOLs. And then they'll basically like spin up a project within a couple months. They'll be at a marketing stage where they can launch it, extract a bunch of money from market makers, never really get that much of a like valuation, but they're going to be on like a, you know, tier one exchange, maybe like a Bybit or something like that, because they've got enough marketing pool. And then the token will just slowly bleed out over time. People flip, people dump, they'll forget about it. And after, you know, 6 months, they'll move on to the next project. And I see that a lot. I see a lot of founders that have like, they're starting a new project and you look at their previous token, it's kind of in the dumps. And it's like, they don't stick to something for a long enough period of time to create something that creates value. It's just easier for them to like flip, make money and then move on to the next, which I think is really, really sad in this industry. And I think really good projects also end up falling in the system and the traps that are left behind by this, because this optimizes for specific behavior, or specific like way that we interact in the space, or specific players interact in the space. Even bigger projects with VCs, it's kind of like a system that's been created, right? Value extraction in some capacity. And really good builders sometimes have to play into that system in some capacity to be able to like push forward. And it's quite sad. Like big projects leveraging airdrop vanity metrics, right, to raise rounds, because that's what they need to do and what the VCs are wanting to see. Things like that.
Interesting. Cool. So, okay, I'm curious. Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Go for it, Nana.
I think I just had one of the things that I love about this crowd is that it's so different. Like, everyone thinks from a very different side. And I was curious, like, Nemus, what is your perspective, like, from the validator side? Have you, like, during the bear, did you see a lot of new chains, and now has it changed a lot, and how has that affected like all the workflow for you guys, and like have you been like, I don't know, I think that maybe during the bear like it's easier to see like projects and evaluate if they're like good or bad, but right now I feel that there's so many. How's that been for you guys?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And by the way, I agree with what Simon said. Obviously, there are a lot of like projects that are more or less motivated by the high valuations right now. They're maybe just for the quick buck, you know, some of them intentionally, some maybe not. But maybe also like not all founders are like that, right? If you just like compare it to the real world. You know, we have people like Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk. I mean, those are obviously like big examples, but some people, you know, they are still motivated to drive like intrinsically the humanity forward, let's say. And I don't think it's true for all the crypto founders, but there might be some exceptions. So, but overall, probably a lot of projects that we see today with like multi-billion dollar valuations might not be around, you know, next cycle. So this is also one of my biggest worries. And what you said, Nara, I mean, during the bear, obviously, and also we as a validator, we kind of have to look at projects almost like from the angle as a VC, let's say, right? Because we also invest our time and resources and so on. So we try to evaluate those things like from a similar perspective, basically. And during the bear, the valuations obviously like are like much more close to reality, and it's a little bit easier to basically kind of see through like what is a good project, what are like good intentions, and you know which projects maybe have like not so good intentions. But during the bull market, it's kind of difficult because obviously like everyone is a little bit you know, affected by the FOMO, let's say. So for us, we have to be careful that we as a validator don't FOMO in every project just because it has potentially multi-billion dollar valuations. And for us as a validator, it means higher rewards potentially, right? So we are like really careful. Like if we see projects that, you know, like are driven a lot, like let's say by some influencers and KOLs, but for us, like the fundamentals or the technical side doesn't make much sense, then we rather pass it on, you know. But yeah, I don't know if it answers your question, but it's a tough time, to be honest. And we don't want to do the mistake and like, you know, marry to a project that might eventually like hurt us very badly long term. So yeah, we need to find the balance somehow. I don't know what you guys' opinion are on this.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, I was while Simon was speaking, I was just like, okay, it must be also very hard from your perspective. And then also I was thinking about the same for 42, because like we're going to be like we would have to look at like the different integrations that we're going to do eventually, and we would have to do kind of the same, like, okay, is it worth it, is it not, is it going to help the project or is it going to hurt us? So really, like, I feel that during the bear it was easier to focus on the main things and to build, but now like the our attention is being divided a lot, so yeah, it's I'm glad to hear that we're not the only ones facing that.
Yeah, that's a part of the bull market that concerns me, to be honest. Because like, ooh, like Stake Zero, like it means a lot to every one of us, and yeah, we don't want like to fall into the hands of maybe some bad actors or something like that. So we have to be very careful these days. But also like investors in generally and delegators and anyone. Right.
Yeah, I think actually it's funny, the three, unfortunately we lost our friend from Nautilus, hopefully she'll join back, but with the three projects on stage right now, I think it's super applicable with Simon and Eclipse. Like, how do you walk that line between open, decentralized, and not just allowing shit to come through Eclipse? With Stake Cito, what chains do you put in the work to support and do so at the highest level? And 42, what protocols and chains like are worth integrating? And it's one of those things you don't think about as a downside to a bull market or the bull part of the cycle until you're kind of in it and you're like, there's so much to sift through, and like how where do you even start? Yeah, I don't know. Where do you even start? Actually, maybe I'll ask you in particular, Nemus, because like I think it's, or Nemus, validating's pretty, everyone somewhat universally understands it. I think it's like a lowish common denominator where, you know, if I don't see Stake Cito on a certain chain, why might that be? Do you guys have criteria, or how do you sort of look at stuff these days?
Yeah, it's a good point. And you won't see us on every chain. That's true. I mean, I think the first thing that we look at is, you know, does the product actually make sense? Like, what are they building, right? Is it something that people are going to use? Is it like solving any problem within crypto or outside of crypto? So I think like the product is obviously something that is very important. Other than that, like maybe on the second spot is the founders or the team behind that, right? I mean, we always try to be very, like in very close contact with the people behind the project. In best case, meet them personally several times if it's possible. Like with VeraChain, for example, that was pretty tough, right? Because they are pretty much anonymous. And even though I have been on the VeraChain after party actually one night, I still don't know how they look like. I haven't met them, you know. I mean, CryptoCito actually met them another day, but I don't know how they look like. So for me, it's like, it's kind of a tricky situation. Like, I think like VeraChain is like a genuine project and so on, but I don't know like how the founders look like. And this doesn't make me feel super comfortable, you know. And I guess Simon knows what I'm talking about. It's like kind of as a launchpad, you probably have more or less the same criteria like as a VC and as a validator. So we just like have a checklist of things that we go through, and then hopefully this checklist was good enough to not like end up, you know, with a bad project or whatever. And obviously, like not every project is going to make it in the end. It's like with startups, it's like only 5% of all the projects are going to survive long term. And maybe like that's also a factor that we simply have to accept. You just want to sort out like the obvious scams, right? Like you don't want to work with scams or scammers. So this is what we try to avoid.
That's true. For us, it's similar to you though, from a business sense. Like we have to sift out like obviously scams and all the red flags, but also it has to make sense from product, narrative, community. Like, do we believe the team is going to be able to deliver? Otherwise, it's a bad business. Like, and that's hard sometimes. Can you see some really well-meaning teams that are building some things that are exciting, but you do the DD and you realize they're like, these guys aren't the guys that are going to pull this off. Like, they're going to get drowned out. They're not strong enough or aggressive enough to pull off the BD stuff they need to do for X project. So it's challenging. And you see so many projects building the same things as well. I'm sure for you, challenging of like, hey, okay, there's 3-4 chains building the exact same product, a similar product. Like, who do we back? Do we back both of them? Like, are they both going to be able to compete in this space, or are they going to get drowned out by a bigger competitor or someone who's just got more leverage?
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I've heard kind of all sides of things at this point in terms of how people handle that sort of situation. I've seen like big projects that invest in small ones out of some sense of like having some control there, knowing they're bigger and better. I've seen ones that kind of do the opposite and will like keep as much to themselves and try and be as, you know, against or separate from competition. Yeah, I don't know if I had a full thought there, but just really interesting hearing all this. I think one of the most interesting things about events like this, I've only been to a couple myself, but hopefully more in future, is you get certain senses and insights and just vibes even that is more or less impossible on something like Twitter or even on Spaces. So yeah, this is really interesting for me to listen to. Any other highlights or low points other than like weather, crypto related, or just big thoughts that came out of it from any of you?
Timmy, I feel that you're having like your aha moment in this space. Yeah, you're just like, oh, wow.
Well, it's very, I have to say it did sound very good to hear, unprompted from any question. Like, I think you said it first, but everyone sort of agreed, like, it seems like crypto's maturing. Like, that is really good to hear, because I was almost starting to get a little bit just, I don't know, ever since like Shiba became a thing, I've looked at crypto slightly differently, and it's just gotten slightly worse over time, but it's starting to come on the mend again, I think, and that's definitely been aided by hearing your guys' take on Token 2042 and just general developments in general.
Yeah,
in general.
Token 2042.
Yeah.
Token 2042. You need something to
venture. You know, I'm going to start my own event. It'll be 42, because that year... No, I won't tell anyone what's important about that number a year either.
So I think I'm very excited for more retail to come in the market, because despite this bull pump and everything going on, we see it more firsthand that retail isn't really back in the market yet. It's still the same PvP, like with different categories of PvP, from like the DGens OG PvP with like liquidity and ETH staking and all this sort of stuff. And then you got the PvP on the like even the more retailish PvP in the crypto space, where you have like airdrop hunting and testnet farming and all this sort of stuff. It's still really prevalent, and we're not really seeing much influx of new users. Like, it's the same liquidity for the most part, just getting recycled over. So, and the liquidity is still very low.
Let me pick all your brains on this, but you in particular. My personal kind of theory, I don't think we're going to see another massive wave of retail, kind of in the same sense that people are speculating, like mainly traders and like analysts, that our overall volatility in our bull and bear cycles is going to lessen. Like, I think at this point, people know about crypto, whereas before, every time something major happened that made it go on to a mainstream news channel, there were millions of people who genuinely were hearing about it for the first time. At this point, like, everyone kind of knows about it. And so instead of a mass wave, I think we're just going to get a trickle that upticks over time in bull markets, where, you know, this is the fifth time someone's heard about it on the news, so they'll actually start looking into it. Or they just heard about a use case that actually they can identify with and sort of resonate with. What do you guys think? I kind of hope I'm wrong. You know, I want to see a massive, crazy influx. And I think there will be an influx at some point. There'll be some event. But I think it's just going to lessen over time. We're not going to have such drastic cycles. Same with our price. It's going to slowly steady out to be somewhat similar to the stock market, both in terms of price action and like new user onboarding, let's say, where it's a changing rate, but a somewhat steady rate, as opposed to these crazy fluctuating cycles.
It will definitely stabilize. I think it will definitely stabilize. But the retail still loves to FOMO, man. Like, remember Tesla and like all these stocks in the last in the
journal. That's a good point.
Like everyone's just like jumping onto Tesla.
Just in general, actually, that's a very good counterpoint. Like, stocks have been around forever, but one little thing like Robinhood coming out that made it more accessible to the average person really sort of had this massive ripple effect and wave. So yeah, I hope I'm wrong, and I don't think we're done with waves either. But yeah, I just feel like everyone knows about crypto at least at this point, right? Does that feel accurate to say? I'm curious. And go for it, Nana.
Yeah, so I do think that people know much more about crypto, and that also like the scammy kind of concept people are not so sure that it's a scam. they're not sure it's completely real, but they kind of doubt. Like they're like, okay, maybe they have some potential. It's just like a new technology. I kind of feel that. Also from looking at other communities, like in Latam, for example, like people are much more open to it, and they know that that's there. So that's one thing. However, I think we talk about that with Nemus a little bit in our conversation in Dubai, and it was, I don't know if we're ready. That's the point. Like maybe we're going to have something big again as Terra. That was actually getting a lot of retail users because they actually got a lot of retail users, but we were not ready. So at this point, I feel that during the bear is when we build, and during the bull is when products get used. And I don't see that products right now can be used by retail users. And I still can see, like, for example, with Daniel, we had some. Like during the last bear, we had some like encounters where it was difficult for us to explain to people why we need to focus on the retail user and in bettering the experience for users in general. Like people were still like, oh, I don't know. Like that is important. That should be something that we had to focus during the bear and that had to be built there so that we were ready right now. So I don't feel that in general we're ready. Again, that's basically what I joined 42, and it's because I think that we need to be ready. Because if that happens, like the user needs to have the best experience and also needs to be safe enough. So I think that we have to focus a little bit more on that. I hope that we can make it. I hope that we really can have everything ready for the final user, because if not, then we're going to have something very similar that would happen with Terra, and we don't want that. So let's see. That's my opinion. I know it's very controversial.
I think that makes a lot of sense, honestly. Yeah, like there's a reason a project that most crypto people don't even have on their radar is absolutely blowing up right now, which is Ton, the open network, which came from Telegram originally. And it's because, like you were saying, now that we're sort of in bull, I think we're still at the beginning of it more or less, because we haven't seen much retail influx. But the things that are getting the attention are the things that are ready to be used for everyday use. And like Telegram is used by people all over the fucking world like crazy. And so between Telegram, Ton, and a couple like coins and protocols out there, namely like Tether, honestly, Tether is probably by far the most used crypto in the world, just because there are people in countries all across the world that use that as their daily like payment through Telegram to each other, friends and family, this sort of thing, because they can't trust their own currency. I know that's a little off from your point, Nana, when you were probably more thinking of, you know, DeFi protocols, L1s, et cetera, but it's all crypto and it's all about like what is actually what there's demand for right now, you know, and who has built something that can meet that demand now that the hype cycle is sort of here. We can go back and clip it. Actually, you had one particular sentence at the beginning of that I thought was perfect. It was something along the lines of the bear is for building, the bull is for using. Like so simple and so on the nose, in my opinion. So on point.
It's crazy though, in terms of community building, the vast difference. Like, we're kind of in the trenches in this all the time, but we're helping projects build communities or building our own communities and everything. And we study a lot of other projects, even ones that have very strong kind of community building efforts. And most of their discords are still pretty dead, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
we go into a lot of like, even, yeah, it's pretty dead discords. And you really see like how different it was at the end of the last bull market. You could have a project that has no marketing whatsoever, just have like a vibrant community of people everywhere. And even KOLs that we interact with, like the KOLs, we were talking about this before, like a lot of KOLs have a limited impact, even the ones with big following. This ones that have like native followings tend to have more impact, but the retail ones that have big YouTube and stuff typically don't have that much impact. When they post, there's impact, but it doesn't really do much. The main value in these KOLs is when you've got 20 of them together all posting at the same time, it creates social proof, which is enough to motivate some people within the space. But you're not really getting that same reach as you would get like UPR. You're not getting the same reach from Cointelegraph or this sort of stuff. Like, it's still, despite being kind of feeling like bull market vibe, it's still a big slog to develop your community in any way. So it's interesting. We see that a lot.
That's interesting. Seems it's almost like luck to some degree.
Wait,
it's just not there yet.
I wanted you to expand on that.
I wanted you to expand on that, Daniel. I was hoping you would. Like, I think there's a ton of luck in crypto, in addition to skill, of course, and talent and vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, just expand on that if you can.
I mean, I guess it's just like, how do you actually build a strong community? I mean, I've sort of been, I mean, before we bought Neno recently to the 42 team, I've been sort of trying to build the 42 community. And like, there's the playbook. It's like post to Twitter, post to Telegram, da, da, da. But at some point, you just need like, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just like recruiting somehow through luck, the right people into your community that just start shilling your project in a meaningful way. And get that to go viral somehow. Because like, you can go through the marketing playbook, just like I'm sure a lot of well-known protocols through that build strong communities have done, go through that playbook and just achieve no community, you know? And it's like, and there's probably thousands of those protocols just reach no community. We just don't know about them, you know? And then we only see, obviously, the big ones that did do it well. And they've got their playbook, which was the same as all the failed ones. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I definitely
there's definitely some leverages.
It's a mixture of skill and luck. I don't think it's completely luck, but I think that there's a high component of luck in it.
You know how earlier someone brought up, you know, comparing different types of projects and then one type being...
But once again, that's also just like the rest of startup. It's like, any successful startup and all successful founders will say how many times they got lucky along the way.
Yeah.
And all the, yeah. Like, so, and whereas a failed startup could do all the same things as a successful startup, but just fail.
Like so
I think
many,
it's like the job of a founder or the head of growth or whatever role it is to increase the probability of getting lucky along the way. And I think that's like, that's what we should be doing to build community, is like doing all the checkpoints, rolling out the playbook, and really any chance you get to increase your probability of luck, like what Simon said a few moments ago, like if we created a token 2042, you know, it's like that's something catchy enough, but that's us putting ourselves in a position to get lucky and actually thinking outside of the box. Guys, on that note, I am running over for another call that I have to jump onto, so I am going to have to excuse myself, but feel free to round this up whenever you guys are ready.
Cool.
Yeah, I want to add something to that as the last piece, because I do think there's a play. I do think there is definitely a source to building community. So it also depends on bandwidth of the team. Something we've experienced is that we actually have the right things to build and engage community. But at times, like you're spending a lot of time on internal ops, trying to get like the communication flows and everything in place so that you can then focus on some of these growth initiatives that create cultural identity. You're right. There's definitely some elements of luck to it, like timing, positioning, like launching. Like you just launch at the right time and it makes a big difference. Or you just catch the trend at the right time, or you're in the right ecosystem at the right time, definitely helps. But there's definitely like some level of repetition to succeeding, and we've done this with Eclipse, right? Like, it was there was so many reasons why we shouldn't have been alive, right? But we put it consistently, put ourselves in the right positions, and like drove height waves, and there's definitely elements like leveraging KOLs, growth strategies, campaigns. There's ways you can bring in the users that isn't just the consistency on Twitter. You need, like, you need the consistency on social. The consistency in community engagement is important in terms of maintenance, but you also need to like drive growth strategies, and then you need to have like culture and identity and emotional anchors that help to actually turn that community into something more, like empower that community to becoming something that grows itself. And that's not easy at all, but there's definitely ways to do it. It's like, if you follow like a very strict playbook, sometimes you don't get there because you need to be thinking outside the box. But there's definitely like some levels of, I guess, foundational consistency, which over time, if you're putting out the right content, you're speaking the right language, you're delivering the right products, you're communicating right, the community will start to form around that. And then when you introduce things like identity and culture and stuff into the community, that's where it starts to kind of really take off on its own and evangelize. But not easy at all, not easy whatsoever, especially in this market. But it's definitely levers you can pull to help make this happen better.
Okay, probably a good place to end on. A final question for you guys, on this sort of luck note and aligning and, you know, the mix between luck and perseverance. Earlier it got brought up, you know, the type of project slash founder where this is their fifth project. The four others have been failures. And I think everyone's gone through the thinking at some point of like, how do you even get to like three? Like, how do people keep giving someone a chance when? And one thing I think I've realized like a few months back is I think part of it is inherently in the back of our minds. We know that there is a bit of luck and timing and all this to things. And so as long as you're sort of have some level of like believing in the human spirit and creativity and such, a project failing, you're able to somewhat sometimes partially write off as like, ah, they just got unlucky. They didn't hit what they needed. But like, that's nothing against the founder or the team. They might get it on the next one. We've seen that just here within Cosmos quite a few times. And it's gone both ways, I think. There's been some great success stories out of it. And there's been some ones where it's like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have given them the second, third, fourth, you know, chance. But I've come to realize, I think, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this as a sort of closing thought, that that's a big part of it, is this luck thing. Like, even if we've never had this kind of conversation, if you're in Web3, you probably have it in the back of your mind that, you know, there's so many factors, so many crazy variables that sometimes things just don't go well. And so oftentimes founders or teams will get multiple chances because of that. There's other factors for sure, but just sort of connecting something we touched on earlier with this. That's one way I've thought to look at it recently. I don't know about you guys.
It's a bit of both. I think it's like, are they able to learn from the previous mistakes? Because when you do your first startup, there's so many learning things. Like, you hire the wrong people, you take the wrong co-founder. They're like, those things can kill your business.
Yes.
Like, absolutely destroy your company by having the wrong hires and not knowing when to let go of them or not having the right co-founders. Like, those things you can learn from one startup to the other, but the question is, are you learning from them or are you forgetting? But then there's also founders that just have poor decision-making skills. I'm not going to speak too much of it here, but Nina knows what I'm talking about. Like, you have a startup with bad decision-making, like, you can give them 3-4 chances, but if they don't learn from those mistakes and change their ways and look and able to see past that to, like, evolve and make better decisions, then they're going to keep repeating the same mistakes. And they might get lucky in a bull run and have a glimpse of success, like they pick the right thing at the right time, but that's short-lived because as soon as the like hype's over, then they're swimming naked. So like same thing in the last bull run, like you're building early on Terra and you're building something, you're really early, like, and you built something, chances are you probably do pretty well. You'd have a community and funding and everything like that, right? But is that an indication of someone who can do that in a bear market when it's like 10 times, 20 times, 30 times harder? Maybe not. So yeah, it's really interesting. That's where luck does play in, but you define that as success if they can only do it for, you know, 6 months or 1 year, and then the poor decision making skills and the lack of grit catches up.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, Simon. And obviously, I mean, you have to be at the right time, at the right place. You know, you also need to have a lot of dedication. And I personally think, like, even, you know, failure is part of the process, you know, like as a founder or as a team or as a CEO or whatever, you actually have to accept failure and maybe even embrace failure. And it's not about like that you fail. It's like, as you said, like how do you deal with that, right? And do you learn from that? And I think like even humanity, you know, we wouldn't be here where we are today as humans if we wouldn't have like also had some very miserable failures back in the past. And it's just part of the process, you know. And I personally have also co-founded several startups in the past. All of them have failed, to be honest. And I think Sexito is now my fourth project. And it's the first time that I feel that it's so far, at least, you know, going in the right direction. So, yeah, you just have to be also very dedicated, you know, for a long time and learn from your failures and, you know, try to do it maybe differently or better next time. But yeah, I just keep it short here.
Yeah, I think the same. I think that it is okay that we fail, and maybe it is harder to understand for the retail user, like for the final user. But I feel that like founders and builders, like they get it, because as Nem said, as Simon said, like we all have been there. We all have to make mistakes in order to be here. But it's about being humble enough to say, yes, I failed, and I understand why I failed, and being so true with it and so humble that also other people can trust you. Like, as long as you did what you had to do, and it was like, okay, things happened, but people can still trust you, and you still have a good network of people surrounding you, I feel that you are going to be able to just go with it and build again. Yeah, so it's definitely complicated. I know that we're going to see a lot of projects that are going to do good for no reason, but that's how the market is. No, it's in general. It's not only here. It's in general how that works. And yeah, I'm excited. I think that the takeaway from Dubai was pretty good. And it's like we are in a better position, but we still have to work a lot of things. And I'm happy also that we are all much mature. I mean, I think with Simon, we started when we were in our early 20s. And I now we're seeing like the new kids, and we're like, how are they partying so much? So there is definitely an evolution in all of these.
I'll give you a hint. In the crypto community, it's probably the cocaine.
But
I think that I gotta yeah, jump, guys.
I was gonna say, I think that's jump a perfect note to end
2 hours of spaces today. Awesome, guys. For me at least, if you guys continue on. But yeah, it's been really great jumping up here, really great having these conversations. And yeah, thanks for inviting me, Nina. And I look forward to more spaces and more community building within Cosmos.
Thank you both for joining so much, Simon, Nemes, and earlier. God, I already forget the name, but our friend from Nolis. Yeah, this has been great. We'll probably do another one. Maybe not exact same time. Times usually switch, but next Thursday we'll have another 42 space. So stay tuned for more info on that. And thanks for joining us, everyone, listeners and speakers alike. Enjoy the rest
of your
week.
Guys.
And
thank
you, guys. Traveling soon. Travel safe.
Happy Friday.
And happy. Oh, yeah, wait, oh, right. Actually, Nena, do you know, will we be doing the space on Friday or Thursday? I just realized. Or are we not sure yet? Next week.
Not sure yet.
Okay. Cool. We'll let you all know. But thanks for joining, and have a great weekend.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never
never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible, when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Eats, tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. I'm